Tonight's episode of CNC Reviews on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today for a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Remember to include the /PWP Radio so they know we sent you.
We here at CNC Reviews would like to remind you to turn off your cell phones and remain as quiet as possible during the show.
And before you start asking questions, we are not kidding. If you don't stay quiet, I will go ghetto on your ass.
Unless you want a large black man beating the shit out of you, I would shut the fuck up.
You're damn right.
Please, sit back, enjoy the show, and remain courteous to your fellow listeners.
Or you know what will happen.
Caleb here, and welcome, friendos, to CNC Reviews, where we review the movies, the shows, the wrestling, the shit, about 50% shit, and 50% all the other stuff. And, you know, I am Caleb Johnson, your creator, co-host, and messiah of this show. That's weird. I need to stop calling myself messiah. Because there was a wrestler, indie wrestler named Messiah, who, like, cut off his thumbs at an event or some shit. It was really weird. Something a few years ago. And as you can tell, my normal co-host, Cameron, could not make it tonight due to some issues, you know, had a family thing. So I am joined here by my other friend who you may hear doing top fives of this pretty much every week, and that is Jamie Lee Mack. Jamie, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing lovely. And, you know, of course, I mean, honestly, it didn't really shock me that I was needed because I'm needed everywhere. So it honestly didn't surprise me when I got the call. And they told me, hey, Cameron's not going to be here. And I said, what a shock. Then the first time it's happened. Definitely won't be the last time.
It's the fourth time.
So I'm here. Good luck.
Yeah, I mean, don't be shocked if NXT at some point calls you and says, hey, Jamie, Tensai can't make it. He's sick. We need you to fill in and do some announcing.
Oh, great.
That just fills you with excitement.
Well, then again, I mean, like, I could probably add some enthusiasm to whenever, you know, Summer Rae is out there facing Bayley or whoever.
Bayley's so awesome.
I don't have an issue with Bayley. I mean, like, that's about as far as it goes with me. I just don't have an issue with him.
Like, the only way I could really see her gimmick working on television is if they bring back Eugene and pair her up with him. That would be great, because Eugene works at the developmental center, doesn't he?
I believe so. Yes, I believe he's a trainer there now.
And nonetheless, we have so much fucking content for you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. So much content that we had to take out the two movies we were going to review, so this is going to be a completely wrestling-heavy episode. So if you don't like wrestling, still listen anyway, because why would you not listen just because it's about wrestling? Even if you don't like wrestling, listen. So we're going to start it off with some reviews with wrestling and whatnot, and that is, the first one is the history of the WWE, or 50 years, whatever. Basically, in honor of the WWE's been around for 50 years, they released a DVD, the awesome documentary with some matches that I have not watched the matches on the disc yet. But it was a great documentary with some interviews from guys like Undertaker, you know, Vince McMahon, Jake Roberts. And let's not forget that they had some, you know, great stories. They discussed Owen Hart's death, which was a true tragedy, and a lot of other just great conversations, some great big inside look at the WWE and where it's come from being just a local territory back in the 60s. Yeah, 60s. So, Jamie, I'm going to let you go first. What are your initial thoughts on this DVD, like, or this set? What did you think about it? What was some of your favorite stuff about it?
When I first heard that it was coming out, I was really, really excited about it because I wanted to know, you know, about the business. You know, like, I wanted to know how the company actually works. And I must say, this documentary is actually really, really good, and it's worth however much it's worth nowadays, I think, like $30 or whatever. Really, really good stuff on here. They cover pretty much, I don't want to say like they cover every little aspect of it, but they cover like the major parts, like the stuff that, you know, that actually intrigued me the most, like, you know, about WrestleMania and how like the company actually started. It was just a regional promotion and then it grew into this global conglomerate. And I mean, I thought that it was just great. And I must say my favorite part about it was when they were interviewing Jake Roberts and his reaction and his reaction to Alice Cooper is all like, I damn near had an orgasm.
I got to tell you, when they told me I'd be with Alice Cooper, I damn near orgasmed.
That part was great.
That was probably my favorite part of the set.
That part was great.
I kind of wish they could have talked about the Benoit situation, because I think it would have been a good time for them to actually discuss it, but I completely understand why they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, like, they don't want to... I mean, like, it wouldn't have really been glamorizing Benoit in any way, but, I mean, yeah, I get it. They don't want to promote him in any way, shape, or form. He's going to be on the network anyways, which is a plus, so that's good. But I am happy that they dedicated an entire chapter to Owen Hart.
That was awesome. And, that was very classy.
And I won't lie, that actually led me to believe, and we'll be talking about Raw just a little bit later on, but when they announced that when they announced the next Hall of Fame inductee, I actually had a little bit of a feeling it was going to be Owen Hart.
Yeah, same thing.
Because when Owen Hart, when they dedicated that entire chapter to Owen Hart in the DVD, it made me think okay, you know, maybe his wife is, you know, I guess letting up on it a little bit. And, you know, maybe it could lead to a lot more. I mean, like, look, Bret Hart had a DVD in 2005. And then when the next Hall of Fame induction ceremony rolled around, he was inducted. So, I mean, like, you never know.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for them to announce King of Hearts, the Owen Hart story. But, you know, that's probably never going to happen.
But definitely, I mean, Owen Hart being in the Hall of Fame, I think, should definitely happen at some point. And when it was announced that they were going to have an entire chapter on Owen Hart's death, that, I mean, like, I had already had my mind made up, okay, I'm getting this DVD, but that just drew me in even more, saying, wow, now I have to get it, because I want to know what they're doing with it, and I must say, they did a tremendous job with it.
Yeah, it took me, I think I just finally watched this set, not really a set, but it's got like two discs, I believe. Finally, I just got the chance to watch it like 3 weeks ago whenever I finally bought it on Blu-ray. And I really like this set. It's a great set. It's definitely worth picking up if you're a wrestling fan.
And also, it wasn't just like a fly-by chapter. I mean, like, it wasn't just something that they spent like a minute and a half on. They actually spent a genuine amount of time on it. Like, I want to say like 10 minutes, I think, was it? Or like...
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, like, they spent a good majority of it, and they had even Jim Ross on there, and he described the entire situation like he was at the table, and they told him, saying, get ready to deliver the worst. And like, you know, they told him that Owen had died, and, I mean, it's just great. I mean, I'm thinking, like, you know, if you want any story on Owen whatsoever, on how, like, they handled that tragedy, definitely watch this documentary, because they have that entire chapter dedicated to him, and it's really good, so definitely check that out.
Yeah, especially since we'll probably never get, like, a set completely about him. This might be the closest we're going to get ever, maybe even for a couple years, so this is 100%. Like, if anything, it's worth it almost just for that.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, do you have anything else to say about the set?
No, I mean, like, it's a great set, and actually the match is on it. Like, I actually have a copy of it right here. Let me see, the match is on it. You've got Hogan versus Andre, and Hogan versus Andre from WrestleMania 3 with no commentary and a straightforward arena camera, so pretty much a different perspective on it. And you've also got the very first Royal Rumble match from 1988. So I mean, like, if you ever
I actually didn't know that.
Yep. So, like, if you ever want to, I mean, that's awesome shit right there. And you've also got the match where Austin 316 began, where Stone Cold faced Jake Roberts, King of the Ring Final 1996. And also the Montreal Screwjob is on here, when Shawn Michaels faced Bret Hart at Survivor Series 97.
Cena Punk.
What's that, sir?
Cena and Punk from Raw last year.
Yes, John Cena versus CM Punk from Monday Night Raw, February 25th, 2013. The match, I believe we gave Match of the Year for the Revy Awards, yes. And also on here, you have the entire full pipe bomb promo from CM Punk in 2011. You also have Rock versus Hogan from WrestleMania 18, overrated.
Yay! No, it's not.
You have Triple H versus The Rock from SmackDown 1999. I believe this was the first world title match on SmackDown. So, yeah, I mean...
Where Shawn was the referee?
Yes, I believe so.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, like, great, great stuff on here. So, definitely worth the, I said, $30, I think. So, yeah, definitely pick it up. Great stuff.
Yeah, like, I've been lately with the newer sets that come out, like Triple H's and Mick Foley's and this. I've been getting them on Blu-ray. Like, it's... I don't know why I get them on Blu-ray, but it almost feels so much more special on Blu-ray. I don't know why I said that, but it just does. If you've got some extra money laying around, definitely buy it.
Yeah, I was meaning to get it on Blu-ray, but I could only find it on DVD, and I wasn't up for paying for the extra shipping charges on Amazon, so I was like, you know what? I'll just sell for the DVD. It wasn't really the shipping that really got me. It was more of like I didn't really want to wait, and like the chances there, it's like, hey, it's right there, get it. So
yeah, I like almost never buy things in like fucking store. Like I used to go to Vintage Stock to get all my stuff. I haven't really done that in a while.
For me, mostly, I mean, like I started collecting the Blu-rays back in I think the first Blu-ray I got was WrestleMania 28, so I've been collecting them for about a year and a half now. I must say, some of them are worth the extra, and then there are some where it's like the DVD is just fine. I mean, like, the first one that comes to mind, I think Greatest Superstars of the 21st Century.
Yeah, definitely get that on DVD.
That set is better set for DVD. I mean, like, I don't really know what the Blu-ray exclusives are on it, but honestly, I don't really think it would be worth it just spending, like, the extra $10 on it. So, yeah, I mean, like, there are some where it's, like, the Blu-ray's a must, and then there are some where it's like, I'll just settle for the DVD.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think the only ones I own on Blu-ray are Foley's, Triple H's, and History of WWE. But I think Ultimate Warrior has one coming out in like April. Like he has a new one that isn't dedicated to burying him, like the 2005 one was.
I still have
so,
yet.
Hey, I'll probably check that out.
I still have yet to watch that one too.
I'm going to very soon, if I can. I'm going to buy that and I'm going to watch that and then watch the new one and see the difference.
Yes, I believe the next one is going to be a match comp. So. I don't think it's going to be much of a bio, so.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, so, yeah, but at least this one will not be hosted by Matt Stryker and Maria.
Like the Randy Savage one. That was
yeah. Stupid. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I love Savage. I've been a huge
it's
Savage.
A good set.
Oh, yeah. It's a tremendous set. I just didn't like who hosted it. I mean, like, I love Matt Stryker. And I can't even say your name, Maria. She's good too, but they just.
Yeah, I didn't think they were a good pairing.
Yeah, I really didn't think they were all that great to host the set, honestly.
I don't like Maria at all, so that might be it too. Anyway, I think we're pretty much done talking about the history of the WWE. So this is something that we were, ladies and gentlemen, saving you for whenever that we all got the WWE Network. But since, unfortunately, you know, Cameron couldn't do it this week, so we were like, hey, let's do a pay-per-view review, which, you know, whenever we got the network, all of us got the network, we were going to be like, just, you know, random ECW, WCW, and WWE pay-per-views. So we decided, since it's actually almost been 10 years since this event happened, that we would talk about and review WrestleMania 20 for all of you. WrestleMania 20 is probably in my top three favorite WrestleManias ever. I love this WrestleMania. It was fucking awesome. You got, like, I think the matches, I have a list of them right here.
12 matches.
Great. Yes, 12 matches. John Cena and Big Show for the U.S. title, Dudley's, Booker T, RVD, Caden, Jindrak, and La Resistance in a Fatal 4 tag for the World Tag Team titles, Christian Jericho, Evolution against the Rock and Stock Connection in a 3-on-2 handicap match, some Braun Panty tag team match. I didn't write down who the people in it were. It was like Tori Wilson, Sable, Jackie, and I think Keebler.
Miss Jackie and Stacey Keebler, I think, yeah.
Yeah. And then Rikishi and Scotty Tuhati against APA, the Basham Brothers, a.k.a. the worst tag team ever, and the world's greatest tag team for the WWE tag team titles. Kane and Undertaker, which was the return of the Dead Man, and Paul Bearer. Victoria and Molly Holly for the women's title, where if Molly lost, she would shave her head. Guerrero and Angle for the WWE title. Cruiserweight Open, which there was like 10 guys in this. I don't need to read them all. Benoit, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, main event, classic match for the world title. And, of course,
I've actually got the DVD everyone in front of me. So.
Yes, and let's not forget the match everyone remembers this pay-per-view for, just the five-star classic that was Brock Lesnar and Goldberg. Doesn't everyone just love this match?
Yes, I believe it's in everyone's top 10, and I believe it's in everyone's classics, and, you know, everyone just goes back and has fond memories of this matchup.
Oh, yeah, Lesnar loved this match so much that he went to play for the Vikings because he said, I'm never going to top this. And then Goldberg said, I've had my best match. I'm done. Ah, got to tell you. And then Goldberg proceeded now, 10 years later, to constantly bash Triple H's nose on Twitter.
You know,
I don't know what the issue is there.
Something that I like to do is like, all right, 10 years ago, it was 2004. It's always kind of neat to look at who was on the WrestleMania card at WrestleMania 20 and then look at the roster now and see who's still there.
Because, three of the guys on the WrestleMania 20 card are currently dead, unfortunately, I believe.
Yeah, which is really, really, really unfortunate. But I believe like half of the guys who are on this card are still with the company, I believe. So you have you just want to dive right into it?
Oh, yeah. Let's start off with the matches that actually matter. What did you think of Cena Big Show? I thought it was a really good match.
John Cena versus Big Show, no, of course. This match, WWE only likes to make it iconic because it was John Cena's first official WrestleMania match, and it was also
championship win.
His first title win as well. John Cena versus Big Show. Of course, Cena practically gets owned this entire match. And at the end, he actually ends up surprising a lot of people. He actually, which, you know, this was the name of it back then, FU's the Big Show. Then he kicks out of it. And I believe the announcers even say that that was the first time that anyone's ever kicked out of the FU. To my knowledge, I'm not exactly so sure about, because I think Taker did at one point in a match.
Wait, did Lesnar?
You see, I'm not exactly sure. I think Taker did at one point in 2003 in a match they had, but I'm not entirely sure. But anyways, Cena, he goes and grabs the steel chain. And, of course, the referee's like, oh, gimme, gimme, gimme. And Cena just chucks the chain away, takes one of his word life nuts, nails Big Show, hits the FU on him again, 1, 2, 3, slips it into his pocket. John Cena is the new United States champion. And, of course, like I said before, WWE likes to glamorize this match because it was John Cena's first official Mania match, and it was his first title win. And we also got the pleasure of playing this match back in 2K14. So
yeah, I mean, of course, like I said, it was a solid match. And Cena's rap before, I believe he said something along the lines of, I'm going to whip your ass like a penis with an STD.
Yeah.
Which nothing will ever beat 2003 Royal Rumble where he says, I'm like a swollen penis, man. You can't beat me.
Cena's rap before that, I think he said, like, my match is with the hippo float from the Macy's parade or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, nothing can ever beat, like, any of Cena's raps and, like, his battle raps from back in the day. So like, that shit was great. This was a solid opening match. And also, both of these guys are still with the company today.
Yeah, and they've had, like, four feuds since this.
Yeah, Big Show and Cena, pretty much. This was not the last time Cena and Big Show crossed paths in the WWE.
Oh, no. Big Show would eventually chokeslam it through a spotlight. They had, like, a cage match. They headlined another WrestleMania together 5 years later.
Yes, they did, alongside with Edge as well. And they
had that very memorable spot with lifting both of them.
Yes, and also they had the cage match at No Way Out 2012, I believe, where Cena's career was on the line and Laurinaitis' career was on the line, which I was kind of saddened by because I was a big fan of Johnny Ace, so I was sad to see
him go. Laurinaitis is so cool.
Laurinaitis is an underrated character. I mean, come on, man. Nobody can beat the scooter. Nobody can beat the People Power Scooter.
Oh, God, that was so good. Except, I mean... Other than that match with Cena, he had... Okay, we seem to have been really talking about Cena versus Big Show.
Am I the only one that doesn't despise that match?
Okay, here's the thing. I would love to say no, but I have not watched that match. I just assume it's terrible. And that's probably not a good thing to do.
It actually... I mean, all right. Was it like a five-star technical classic? No. Was it a humorous match? Yes. I laughed at it a few points.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, we all knew that Laurinaitis was going to win, so...
I didn't know that.
Well, Caleb, you had hope. You had a lot of hope, and I give you credit for that. All right.
And I wasn't... Okay, we've been talking about Cena versus Bishop, and of course we can't go through every match on the card, so I'm just going to breeze through the ones so we can talk about the really important ones. Both Fatal 4-Way tags were very solid. Both guys retained their titles. I still don't remember Booker T and RVD doing anything besides this match, but still.
I remember RVD hitting the 5-star frog splash, I believe, on Rene Dupree. Definitely, I thought that this was really neat, and, you know, this was a really good way of getting a bunch of guys on the card. Kind of like what Money in the Bank accomplished.
Yeah, exactly.
But this was definitely a really, really solid way of getting everybody on there. And also, I mean, like, you have both matches, 16 guys. From here, from the World Tag Team title match, RVD is still kind of around. Booker is around.
Bully's in TNA.
Yep. Dudley's Bully is in TNA still. Devon is somewhere.
Garrison Cade is dead.
Garrison Cade unfortunately passed away in 2009, I believe. Mark Jindrak.
No one told me until last year, by the way.
Are you serious?
No one. I did not know he was dead until like 7 months ago.
I remember going on YouTube and seeing that, I forget who I was sub to, but somebody had made a tribute video to Garrison Cade and it said rest in peace, and I'm like, Garrison Cade died? Are you serious? So like, I typed in Garrison Cade on Google, and there were a bunch of reports saying that he passed away, and I was like, well, that sucks.
I don't think anyone even knows where Mark Jindrak is.
He was originally supposed to be in Evolution.
I'm so glad that he wasn't.
Yeah, I'm happy that he wasn't. He honestly didn't really have the fit for it. I'm actually surprised that he didn't go further than he really did, because I thought that, you know, a guy like him could actually go somewhere, but he only went as far.
Big dude.
But he only really went as far as being Kurt Angle's lackey. So.
Oh, yeah, that is true. He did do that.
Yeah, him and Luther God Awful Reigns.
Oh. Luther and, fucking Reigns.
And then you had La Resistance.
Was Rob Conway in this match? Or was that, or was Sylvain still in it at this point?
I believe it was Renee and Sylvain, if I'm not mistaken. Because this is before the draft, and this is before Renee got drafted to SmackDown.
Oh, okay, okay.
So I believe this is Renee and Sylvain, if I'm not mistaken, which Renee, I believed, competed at this WrestleMania when he was only 20 years old.
Yeah, he was like one of the youngest WrestleMania competitors in history, if not the youngest.
Fun fact, Renee Dupree was actually born in the province that I'm currently living in.
That's interesting.
So yeah, fun fact there. And I think Renee Dupree actually came back, competed in ECW for a little bit, and then he left again.
I don't remember that. I'll have to look that up.
I think. I'm not sure if he competed on TV, but I do remember him being a part of the roster one point or another.
Well, okay. Basically, whenever if they release any WWE ECW episodes on the WWE Network, if I see a random French guy who's very bland but definitely has potential, then I'll know it's him.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the other one, you got Rikishi and Scotty, who were two-thirds of Too Cool, yep. APA, who this was JBL's last pay-per-view appearance as Bradshaw, by the way.
Yeah, and
the Bashams were terrible.
Yeah, all right, and Scotty and Rikishi actually recently came back as part of Old School Raw.
Terrible match. Hilarious moment.
Oh, yes. Yes, and as for the APA, this was Bradshaw, the character Bradshaw's last pay-per-view match, and the Bastion Brothers. I find this funny because both Bradshaw and the Bastion Brothers would, like, be part of the same stable later on.
Yeah. Oh, that is true. I forgot about that. Yeah, a year later, they were part of the same stable.
Yep. And the World's Greatest Tag Team, Shelton Benjamin, I believe, is still in the Indies. Charlie Haas, I'm not exactly sure.
Shelton is currently out of action with an injury.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and then I believe Charlie is still hanging around Ring of Honor somewhere.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. Both matches really good, and like I said, it gave everybody a chance to be featured at WrestleMania 20.
Yeah, it was just... Yeah, it was really good. And then the Divas match, there's nothing you can really say about the bra and panties match.
First ever Playboy evening gown match, Sable and Tori.
Oh, yeah. It was the evening gown match.
It was supposed to be an evening gown match, but then Sable's just like, fuck this, I'm just going to compete in my bra and panties.
I just like to imagine that Brock Lesnar is like standing backstage with a really creepy look saying, I'm going to fuck her one day.
Oh my God. But yeah, this match, you can't really say much about it. I mean, like, other than that, it was a Divas tag team match, and the evening gown part of it was completely tossed out the window. But yeah, so I believe Tori Wilson and Sable ended up getting the win from this one, and it wasn't a five-star classic by any means. But yeah, I mean, it was what it was, so...
Then we've got Victoria and Molly Holly for the women's title, where Molly shaves her head. I honestly don't remember anything about this match besides Molly getting her head shaved.
I thought this match was pretty good. I remember the crowd being dead. Just for some reason. And then once the match actually ended, because Molly Holly got pinned, I think the crowd began coming alive again because they realize, hey, Molly Holly is getting her head shaved. And I want to know how much they paid her.
Yeah, because whenever you're paying a woman to shave, it's just like with Serena Deeb back in like 2009.
Yes.
Like, how much do you pay a woman to shave? Wait, no. I saw The Wolf of Wall Street. You can pay a woman a lot of money to shave her head, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yes, that happened in The Wolf of Wall Street. I know.
Yes, but apparently I've heard apparently in certain interviews that Molly Holly has done since then, apparently she had no problem with it because she knew that she was creating a WrestleMania moment. Which doesn't get talked about very much, but I mean, like, it still happened. But as for the women's title match, I remember the commentary about it. Lawler was being a pervert, like he always
of course.
Did.
He's Lawler.
And
I believe at one point he said something about her. He made some joke about her being a virgin. Said, so since Molly's such a good little girl, are they going to shave her head or all of her?
Oh, my God.
That's the one thing I remember about that match, now that thinking about it. Because Lawler's commentary was so gold when he was a heel.
Yes, Lawler was That's terrible. But
What are some other? We got Christian and Chris Jericho, which is a very underrated WrestleMania match.
Oh yeah, and both divas are not there anymore.
This is one of them has a really cool looking restaurant in Chicago.
Yes, that I've heard nothing but good things about, and I definitely want to go there someday.
If I'm ever in Chicago, I'll definitely go, because think you go there, you basically get to meet Victoria. It's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, because she's there nonstop. All right.
So then, like I was saying, we've got the underrated Christian versus Chris Jericho.
Christian versus Chris Jericho was very good. I remember the build-up going into this, of course, you know, Chris Jericho being infatuated with Trish Stratus, and also there's the bet where it's like he could have sex with Trish before Christian could have sex with Lita, and they bet $1 Canadian on it, and, of course, you know, Trish and Lita found out about it. They got pissed.
They had a tag team match at Armageddon.
Yes, they had a Battle of the Sexes, I think Bischoff called it, at Armageddon 03. And, of course, you know, the match, though, I thought was very, very good. Definitely was not one of Jericho's highest moments in his entire career because of what happened afterwards. Trish ends up getting involved. Ends up inadvertently costing Jericho the matchup by, I believe, elbowing him in the head, and Christian rolls up Jericho. Jericho, and he gets the win about it, and Trish tries to tell Jericho that she's sorry and stuff, and, you know, she, you know, tries to, you know, make sure that he's all right, and then Christian runs back, and she tries and stops Jericho from attacking him, and then... Slap in the face. Christian gets the...
Unprettier.
Unprettier at that time on him.
Such a better name.
Yeah, and then they both go up on stage and they start making out, and then, well, it's obvious that this was Trish's apparent heel turn, which would last for the better part of nearly 2 years. And, yeah, I mean, like, it was great, and... I believe it also led to a very solid handicap match between Christian and Trish against Chris Jericho at Backlash the next month.
Yeah.
But as for the Jericho and Christian match, I thought that it was very, very good, very well done. And, I mean, like, it made for a great storyline.
And then one match that I don't think people really remember that much, even though it was a good match, just quickly talk about, is the Cruiserweight Open.
The Cruiserweight Open was very good. I mean, I remember watching this back when I was a kid, and I really, really enjoyed it.
It was really fun. It's just like Cruiserweights. This started the trend for about the next 3 years of doing these at least 4 times a year about.
Yes, but this one, I believe, was the best one, though.
Yeah, I agree.
First ever Cruiserweight Open. Oh, yes, and by the way, Christian and Jericho, they're still here. Well, Jericho's here somewhat. But
yeah, I think Christian's here when he's not injured.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
Christian, yep. If I can talk, is it cool? Like, people, if you haven't watched SmackDown,
all right, people,
mute for a second.
SmackDown sports spoiler alert.
Christian is going to be going for the undisputed title. He's in the chamber match at Elimination Chamber. That should be interesting.
Yes, Christian will be involved in the WWE World Heavyweight Championship Elimination Chamber match. At the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, I still think they should call it No Way Out. But
Claudio Castagnoli.
Yes, if you know who that is.
Yeah, if you know who that is. So that's not even a spoiler. If you know who Claudio Castagnoli is from Ring of Honor, then you know who I'm talking about.
Yep.
All that matters.
Alrighty. Alright, now as for the Cruiserweight Open, you had Chavo Guerrero, Jamie Noble, Funaki, Ultimo Dragon, Rey Mysterio, Nunzio Tajiri, Shannon Moore, and Billy Kidman, whom I love his theme song, just saying.
Billy Kidman had a great thing.
He really did. But as for this match, you know, definitely another great way of getting everybody on the card. Just like what the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match has accomplished. This one I thought was really, really good. You had some great, you had some great
spots
back and forth, especially the spot where Billy Kidman does the shooting star press to, I believe, Jamie Noble, and Nunzio, I think, after he got pinned or canned, or no, he got canned out, I believe. But yeah, this match.
It was really, very really good.
And also,
I think Rey is the only one that's still in WWE.
Yes, I believe out of all 10 guys, Rey Mysterio is the only one that's still active, besides Chavo, who's in TNA.
No, he's not.
You see, this is how much I keep up with TNA. I don't even know who's in the business anymore, or in the company.
Yeah, he lost to Feast or Fired.
My Feast or... I even watched that, too. Jeez.
Right. And then, Cruiserweight Open, very fun match. And then these are more into the, I guess, the main attractions for the card. We've got the handicap match with Evolution against the Rock and Stock Connection. I know Foley hated this match. It was his first match in 4 years. But, hey, I thought it was a decent match.
Yes, Rock and Sock versus Evolution I thought was very, very good. Of course, you know, the build-up going into this, you know, whether Foley was, you know, or sorry, whether Foley, you know, still had it in him to compete. And I must say him and Rock made a very, very, him and Rock and Flair and Batista and Orton had a very, very solid match. Trying to remember,
Orton RKO'd Foley for the win.
Yes, and also this was The Rock's final match before he made his official return in 2011.
Yeah, that's very true. And then let's not forget that if you don't like this match, anyone who doesn't like this match, all I'm going to say is this match set up for Backlash 2004, which is one of the greatest matches I've ever seen between Orton and Foley.
Which Randy Orton and Mick Foley had one of the best hardcore matches ever. I mean, it was nothing short of absolutely phenomenal. And that really proved to me how much Orton is willing to give.
Yes.
Because Orton... If you remember before this, I don't think it had ever been busted open. Not that
maybe,
I
think maybe once on like accident.
Yes, maybe once on like a Raw or something. But I don't remember Orton actually, you know, intentionally being busted open. And that match proved like, all right, Orton wants this.
Yeah, like it's one thing I will definitely say about their match at Backlash was Orton has taken some bumps since then, but he's never taken those kind of bumps since that night.
Yes. One thing I do remember, though, about Rock and Sock versus Evolution, one part that kind of made me chuckle was when Rock was going for the people's elbow, and he did the Ric Flair strut before he hit it.
Oh, that was great.
That was good. But as for the match itself, I mean, like, Foley has, you know, gone on record and stated that he thought that he didn't deliver, but I honestly thought that the match was just fine. I mean, like, I had really no gripes with it, so it was good.
Yeah, and then, of course, there isn't much to say about this match. Kane versus Undertaker. Of course, this is the first match Undertaker competed in as the Dead Man since before he was injured in, like, 2000 or whenever,
yes.
Late 1999. And Kane, of course, had buried him at Survivor Series, leading to the Dead Man, you know, that you had Paul Bearer and the Druids. And there's nothing really to say about this match other than the fact that Kane's Titantron was really cool. And
it was.
Yeah, and then all I remember about this match is I remember Undertaker hitting the Tombstone, and I remember Undertaker tackling Kane into the ring apron or whatever. He shoved
yeah.
it or whatever. I don't know what the term is.
Yeah, well, all right. Oh, by the way, as for Foley and Rock and Batista, Orton and Flair, Orton is still here. I mean, like, he's the champion. Flair is retired.
Flair is still, he still has his foot in the sarcophagus.
Yes. Foley is recently done. Rock would go on to come back and wrestle Cena twice and Punk twice. And wrestle Miz and R-Truth, in which the buy rate was blamed on Miz and R-Truth. And the other guy is being hated on badly, which we will discuss later on. Batista, who recently came back. And so, yeah, out of this entire thing, I believe only...
Orton is the only full-timer.
Yep. So there you go. Now, as for Taker... Now, as for Taker and Kane, wasn't one of Taker's better Mania matches, but, I mean, like, everyone was excited because the actual dead man Phenom character came back, and that's what everybody was waiting for because the gong had, you know, gone off for the first time in a long time, and everyone was just waiting to see the old Undertaker. And that's what everybody...
Exactly.
And that's what we got. And, you know, like, again, match wasn't perfect. I was never really a fan of Kane and Taker's matches. I believe the only one I really actually liked was their Inferno match. And a lot of people really don't like that one, but I actually thought that it was... I actually thought that was pretty good. But this one definitely wasn't, you know, a classic. But, you know, it's iconic because it was Taker's match back at the old Undertaker.
Yeah. And then Kane is currently kind of wrestling. Like, he was in the Rumble, I guess.
Kane
he's wrestling in slacks and house
Kane,
shows.
Kane was wrestling in pants. That was scary. And the Undertaker...
He's ripped, though.
Oh, yes. Kane... I give Kane credit. I mean, like, he's... I mean, like, I'm not saying that he was... out of shape beforehand, but I mean, like, he's doing awesome now.
And then Taker, Undertaker's wrestling once a year.
And Taker's doing only once a year appearances, except for last year, because he actually wrestled more than once, but...
he has four matches.
Yes, which was really, really awesome, so... Yeah.
And then, besides that, we got three matches left on the card. Goldberg-Lesnar. Okay, let's not dwell on this match at all. This is one of the worst WrestleMania matches of all time. I love Goldberg, and I love Brock Lesnar. This is probably the worst match I've ever seen from either of them, and this is coming from a person who's watched more than his fair share of Goldberg squash matches. This match was horrible. There's nothing you can say. They were Lesnar flipped off the fans, for Christ's sakes.
There's nothing you can say or do that will make this match any better.
Unless you played in WWE 2K14.
Yeah, probably do a better match than they could on 2K14.
It's just...
Yeah.
Oh, okay, and as far as then, Lesnar is doing part-time. He just wrestled last Sunday. And then Goldberg, he just talks about Triple H's nose on Twitter.
Yeah, that's really it. And what was I going to say? And
Stone Cold has a Revy Award-winning podcast.
Yes, and I think the only thing that – and, you know, I think even Austin during the match was saying, like, you know, like, come on, fight, do it. And – They weren't having any of it. Because they just did not give two shits. It was obvious that both guys were on their way out. It was definitely overhyped, and it did not deliver.
For Christ's sakes, Lesnar played preseason for the Vikings, was cut and went to Japan and became IWGP World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, not much else you can say about this one.
Yeah, and then got the two best matches on the card, in my opinion at least, and that is, first up, before we talk about the main event, Eddie Guerrero and Kurt Angle, which was Eddie's final WrestleMania win, and probably
one of
easily in the top two Angle WrestleMania matches.
One of the most... underrated WWE title matches in WrestleMania history.
This match is not talked about enough.
No, it is not. And this match was definitely one of Eddie and Angle's best. Solid, back and forth, quick reversals. I mean...
Awesome finish.
Yes, and I mean, this this match was technical. That was, I mean, that's the best way you can describe it. Just technical at its finest. Angle and
the build to this was awesome.
Yes. Yes, and also, and this also led to Angle, you know, turning heel. And he was saying that, like, you know, a former drug addict like Eddie Guerrero should not be representing the company as a champion. I mean, like, that stuff was great. I don't believe something like that had been done before.
I don't think so.
But it was, I mean, it was great.
Speaking of which, if you want to hear I'm not saying it's awesome, but if you've actually read Eddie Guerrero's book, like I have, it's a great read. He actually, if you really want to know the full details on Eddie's drug addiction, that is in his book. It's some really amazing how he overcame it. Like, some really fun, like, he talked about how, like, whenever he would go to bed, he would be, like, so scared. Like, because he would almost have to sleep with the lights on because, like, he always felt like the door would just bust open and something would come to get him. But, like, during the day, it would be fine. It's just some really messed up stuff. I don't know why I just started talking about Eddie's drug addiction. I have no idea why I just started talking about Eddie's drug addiction. But this match was really awesome. Like you said, one of the most underrated matches in WrestleMania history. And this is, like, I think that it's because WrestleMania 20 is so remembered as Benoit's night.
Yeah.
And I don't think people think about this as much.
The finish to this match, though, was great. I mean, like, Eddie loosening the boot, Angle going for the ankle lock, pulls off the boot, rolls up Angle, holds onto the ropes. I mean, classic Eddie fashion. And I mean, like, it was just great. And, you know, fast forward 10 years later, unfortunately, Eddie is no longer with us. Passed away, unfortunately, November of 05, which was definitely one of the biggest blows to the wrestling business ever, because Eddie Guerrero was one of the greatest performers of all time. There's no question about it. This guy, I mean, I think, I forget who said this at his Hall of Fame induction. I forget if it was either Vicky or Mysterio. I think it was Mysterio. He said that he made us love him and he made us hate him.
Yes, it was Mysterio.
And
almost positive it was him.
One of my favorite heel themes of all time was when he turned heel in 2005. His first heel theme. I love that theme song. Oh, that is so good. But
had to call Eddie.
Yep. And Kurt Angle, well, he's with TNA, has stated that he would like to come back to WWE. And I'm just saying right now, if I hear Angle's theme song on Raw, I'm going to flip.
Oh,
I'm going to go nuts.
Yes. We need to hear the You Suck chant again on TV, but with an awesome theme and in a positive way.
Yes. Oh, it was so good.
And then, of course, the main event. And we have Benoit, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, which was one of the greatest WrestleMania matches ever.
The greatest.
One of the greatest triple threat matches ever.
Of all time, in my opinion. The greatest. And it's a match that
can
get overlooked.
Definitely.
You know, because of one particular person that was in it.
If I didn't love Undertaker, Angle, and Rock so much, this would probably be my favorite triple threat match.
Yes. Taker, Angle, Rock is my favorite match of all time, but this one I still consider is the best triple threat match ever.
Yeah, like, it was kind of weird the way that they wedged Shawn into it. I don't know if it was because they didn't think that Benoit and Triple H would be able to headline as well.
Yeah.
I don't know, but still, it doesn't matter. It was amazing.
I do remember how Shawn Michaels got into this match, though. I remember they had the contract signing with Benoit. He super kicked him, and then Shawn Michaels signed the contract instead, basically inserting himself into the match.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, but, like, at the same time, like, this match was just, it was a great match, because it was,
I mean, like,
even though it, of course,
Shawn Michaels off of WrestleMania.
Yeah, like, I mean, who would he have even faced if he wasn't in that match?
There's not many people he could have faced at the time.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone he could have faced, really.
Nope. Edge was injured, so.
Yeah, Edge would have probably been an actually decent choice if he wasn't, you know, with his broken neck.
But, you know, anyways, this match, it's great. And also, no, of course, this match always gets, you know, looked after, I guess, if I can use that term. I'm not really sure if I'm using the right term or not, but it gets ignored a lot because of, you know, what Benoit did and how Benoit, you know, spent his last days here doing. But me, personally, I choose to remember Chris Benoit, the wrestler, not Chris Benoit, the person who he was on June 27th, I believe, was his was the date that he died.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, this match, I mean, it was great. Just the overall story that all three guys told in this match was great, because there was at one point where Triple H and Shawn Michaels actually teamed up, suplexed Benoit through the announce table, and then both guys had, I think, their spot for a few minutes before Benoit finally came back in. He had the sharpshooter on Triple H. Michaels kicked him in the head, and that was a hard-ass kick, too.
Yeah.
But definitely this match was you know, perfect, great. If you haven't seen it, go find it on YouTube, especially now since the network's coming. So, yeah, definitely that match is worth checking out. And, yeah, that would conclude WrestleMania 20.
Yeah, and let's not forget this. I don't think we said this, but, like, Shawn, you know, since then is retired.
Yep, and Shawn Michaels is actually doing a lot right now. He's got his hunting show, which I believe is I'm stuttering already. McMillan River Adventures with Keith Kirk. And Triple H is, he's turning into the head guy. And Benoit, unfortunately, is no longer with us.
Unfortunately, Benoit committed a double homicide and a suicide, and that's that, I guess.
As far as we know,
we don't know the 100% details.
Yes, but I'm not going to play a conspiracy theorist, so.
You're not Jesse Ventura.
No.
Well, let me tell you something, Jamie. I think that aliens are involved, somehow time-traveling Illuminati. I'm sorry, that's just my Jesse Ventura impression. I just couldn't resist. But, yeah, we don't really know. None of us were there with the whole Benoit thing. And I think at the end of the day, the only people who really know, or the only guy who really knows what happened and what was going through Benoit that day is Benoit, and we're not ever going to know.
Nope.
That's just not.
It's going to be one.
But like I said, he was an amazing performer, and that's how we should remember him. We should not remember how he was his final days. We should just remember the amazing wrestler that was Chris Benoit. We don't need to remember Chris Benoit just in that mental state.
Yes.
But yeah, that was a very long WrestleMania 20 review that lasted about 40 minutes.
Yeah. 20, though. Great show, though. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, I think it might be my favorite WrestleMania next to 19 and 17.
Definitely.
And then moving on very quickly to the top five before we talk about the current shit going on. And there's top five wrestlers who always bleed. This is a very random list, and I have no fucking clue why I came up with this idea. But why not? I'm going to go first because Cameron's not here to say, why you always make me go first? So I'm going to go first. Number five is Abyss. Now, TNA's monster. Oh, my God, I said that so professionally. I love it. TNA's monster. This last year, if you've seen him in the Joseph Park gimmick, every other week, he is, like, I can't name the last time I saw him on TV where he was not busted open. And then he turns into a bit. It's really weird. I hate the Joseph Park storyline, but whatever. But this dude has, like, busted himself open so many times. So many Doomsday Chamber of Blood matches. Which, if you don't know, if you don't watch TNA, it is a cage match where your opponent has to be bleeding before you pin him. Which is kind of an interesting concept. I don't know. But nonetheless, that is five. Number four is Sabu. Now, a lot of people like to diss the Sabu botches. Whatever. Sabu literally busted himself open, like, every single match. I can't name a match. I cannot name a no disqualification match that Sabu was involved in where he was not bleeding from head to toe by the time it was over. Or at least was bleeding from some part of his body. Like, oh my God, if you haven't seen that Terry Funk, that was Terry Funk and Sabu. If you haven't seen the Terry Funk-Sabu match, their barbed wire massacre match, I don't remember what pay-per-view it was from, but oh my God, that might be my favorite ECW match ever. That was amazing. Three is Hulk Hogan. There was not a time in the 80s, every big match Hogan was in, almost every big match he was in, he would be busted open, he'd hulk up, and then he'd win. But, dude, Hogan was bleeding from head to toe all the time. That might be why he wears a bandana all the time, besides of the bald spot that he's so known for. Hogan bled all the time. And number two, Abdullah the Butcher. Look at Abdullah the Butcher's head. Look at it. He has, like, so many scars. He's insane. Like, Abdullah the Butcher is just a wrestler where I cannot name an Abdullah the Butcher match where he was not busted open, no matter what company he was in. He was bleeding head to toe all the fucking time. It was insane. Number one is probably the most known. Maybe it's because he looked the coolest when he was busted open, but Ric Flair. Oh, my. The way the blood would go into his hair. He would have, like, bright red hair when he would be busted open, especially in his later days. It was awesome.
Flair practically dyed his hair mid-match.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And with all the Flair style and from profile, that probably wouldn't be the only time that night that his face would be covered in blood. Oh, that's gross. Oh, God, I don't know why I just made that joke.
You're just burying yourself even more, Caleb.
Jeez, oh, I'm burying myself. Hole so deep. Oh, right. I almost made a joke. I'm not going
to... All right, you've talked enough.
Okay, do your top five, James.
All right, my top five bleeders, all right. Number five, you got Sabu, like you mentioned there. Oh, bled practically ever she was in, you name it, barbed wire, weapons matches, like anything you could think of, he would always be bleeding. Abdullah the Butcher, like you mentioned, the guy's head is covered in history because he would always friggin' bleed. And I mean, like his head just reminds me of like hills. You know, like up and down. It's like, I mean, all right. Number three, you got Terry Funk.
Oh, yes.
Now, this is a guy that, you know, I mean, like, at his old age, at the time when he was in ECW, this guy definitely dedicated his time to that company. And this guy definitely bled. And when he bled, he fucking bled.
Yes,
just saying.
Indeed.
Yes. And especially one match that I can remember where this is like a more recent match of his. One Night Stand 06.
Oh, my God.
When I think he cut his eye, I think, mid-match, and he came back.
Yeah, it was so fucked up.
Like, holy crap. All right. Number two, you got Mick Foley. Mick Foley in ECW, I mean, like, this guy was absolutely crazy. And you know, just like Terry Funk, when he bled, he definitely fucking bled. And especially, let me see, I believe his I Quit match with Ric Flair at SummerSlam 06, a more recent one. Yes, his hardcore match with Edge at WrestleMania 22. And number one, I think it's pretty much obvious who it is, Ric Flair. Like I said, the guy's hair practically dyed pure beet red all match, and it was crazy, but Ric Flair made bleeding look cool.
He did.
And I'm not saying go out and go bust yourself open. Leave that to guys like Ric Flair. But, you know, like, when Flair bled, it meant something. So there you go.
Ah, yes, indeed. And those are our top fives, which, again, don't ask me why I came up with that idea. It was different, and I was like, why not? It was so fucking random and weird. But, hey, if Cameron had been here, he would have put Shark Boy and the Great Khali on the list somehow.
Blood.
So... there's that. Anyway, nonetheless, we've got a lot of time, actually. I just realized that. For some reason, I thought we had a lot less time than we do. We actually have quite a bit of time. We have all the current WWE discussion with the Royal Rumble and Raw. Now, the Royal Rumble has started some very controversial shit with the IWC and even some of the fans that were attending live at the Royal Rumble. So, Jamie, why don't you give your opinion on the... Well, we're not really going to talk about Raw very much, except for the six-man tag that actually affects the next pay-per-view. So what were you, what did you think about all this crazy shit that happened at the Royal Rumble?
Okay, first off, people need to stop complaining about the Rumble because I thought that it was a very good event. Bray Wyatt, Daniel Bryan, best match of 2014 so far. That was a great match. Brock Lesnar and Big Show was good for what it was. Nobody was expecting a five-star classic because Brock Lesnar was going to come out strong. Cena and Orton, I feel so bad for Cena and Orton.
Orton did some of his best heel work since turning heel in this match.
Yes.
That was the saving grace of it.
Now, I get the fact that Cena gets a rematch from this because he lost the world title at TLC, so, you know, he should get something back from this. I get that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know Randy Orton and John Cena. We've seen it time and time again. And yeah, sure, they're facing off. Probably will not be for the last time.
This was their, like, ninth pay-per-view match against each other that was one-on-one for the title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I give credit for trying to do something different. I believe Cena hit a very good cutter. I've been calling it RKO.
Yes, thank you.
But I've been corrected so many fucking times this week, so I'm going to say cutter. And Orton, Orton hit the AA, and he even did the STF on Cena, which, I mean, I hate to be critical, but it really wasn't all that great.
I don't want to diss Eddie, but it was better than Eddie's from WrestleMania 21.
So yeah. And you know, with the Wyatts being involved, this is pretty much setting up the match between Cena and Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania, which, you know, it's a match that I thought would happen at some point, but it's just like I said on WrestleRant Radio yesterday, it's a match that I don't think is WrestleMania quality. That's WrestleMania worthy, I should say.
Yeah.
Now, as for the Rumble match, okay, basically we have two main complaints for the Rumble match. Number one, Daniel Bryan was not featured. Number two,
he was not even advertised.
Yes. And number two, Batista won. Let's just knock these down a little bit. First of all, people who are complaining that Daniel Bryan was not in the Rumble match, please tell me at any point was WWE ever mentioned Daniel Bryan being in the Royal Rumble match? If I am wrong,
they mentioned Xavier Woods being in the Rumble match.
Yes, this is true, but who gives a shit about him?
I care more about Consequences Creed.
Bad News Barrett said that he was going to be in the Rumble match, and he was never in there.
He also said Papa Shango was going to be in the Rumble.
That was great. But anyways, with Daniel Bryan not being in it, he was never advertised. So technically, you got what you paid for.
Like, should Bryan have been in the Rumble and won it? Probably. But should people be bitching? Like, people were acting shocked that he wasn't in it.
Yes, and I feel so bad for Rey Mysterio, because when number 30 hit, when Mysterio came out, that crowd was all over Mysterio. Mysterio did not deserve to get booed, I think.
Poor Mysterio.
Yes, and they were even cheering when he got tossed out, which I feel really, really bad for, because I'm a big fan of Mysterio. But, all right, and the number two reason, Batista winning. That was obvious. And if you're complaining that it was so obvious, why did you watch?
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
One very noteworthy thing from the Rumble, Kane's record was broken.
Yes, Kane's record, which stood for, I believe, 13 years, was broken this past Sunday. Roman Reigns breaking the record with 12 eliminations, and I believe he tossed up the likes of El Torito, Kevin Nash, I believe, JBL... the great Khali, I believe Cesaro was in there as well, and his fellow Shield members, Rollins and Ambrose. So, yeah.
Let's not forget Alexander Rusev, the new Vladimir Kozlov, was randomly in the Royal Rumble.
When his music hit, I honestly thought Vladimir Kozlov was coming back under a new name. Because
he has a sick theme, by the way.
Because I'm probably breaking the first commandment of wrestling when I say this. I don't watch NXT. So I had no clue who this guy was.
I watched him, last time I watched NXT, he squashed like Kofi Kingston, I think.
Which doesn't surprise me. But yes, as for the Rumble match itself, I mean, Batista winning again, it was predictable. And for those of you that said that it was predictable and you wasted your time, I'm just saying now, if you knew it was going to happen, then why did you watch? That's it.
I mean, I will say this, and I've seen a good acquaintance. I'm not really like friends of the dude, but I have talked to him. I haven't talked to him in a while, but a dude who's been very awesome to me since joining Twitter is Seth Gut. You know, Gut Wrench Power Blog. He writes for our network, actually. I believe does he? I think I'm almost positive he does. If he's wrong, I'm sorry, yep. But yeah, okay, he does. Well, basically, I saw him, and I guess he wrote an article about it, which, and I agree with him 100%. This was the year of the worst surprise entrance.
Yeah, I mean, as for surprising entrance, we didn't. I mean, like we got JBL, and having JBL in there got two things done. One, JBL entered a Rumble because the character JBL had never entered a Rumble before.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and number two, it was another person for Roman Reigns to toss out.
Yeah, I just wish he could have done some stuff, because he kind of just got in the ring and said, "Take my coat, Michael," and then Roman.
Yeah.
Kevin Nash, I mean, I never liked it. I mean, Kevin Nash was cool, I guess, but we've
Kevin
seen
Nash,
it before.
Nash was kind of surprising, or Nash was actually kind of surprising for me, because I honestly didn't expect him to come out.
Oh, I didn't expect him either. It's just that whenever when he came out, I was just like, oh, it's Kevin Nash.
Oh, yes, and the return of Sheamus as well.
That was one. I said it 6 months ago. Whenever I heard he got injured, I said Sheamus is returning at Rumble.
And Sheamus, you know, I marked out when Sheamus came back. I've been a huge fan of Sheamus for a long time now, and you know what? This is great. And, you know, like when his music hit, it's a shameful thing. I jumped out of my seat. I marked out. I was so happy. And, I mean, like, it was great. And you know what? I can see myself purchasing this Rumble. A, because it's the Rumble. B, I have Rumbles 01 through 13, so I'll probably get this one as well.
I think I have 03 through, like, 07. Because I don't have 08 for some reason.
But the Rumble event has always been my favorite pay-per-view of the year, so nothing is really ever going to spoil it for me. I really haven't seen a Rumble that I haven't walked away from saying, wow, this is a really shitty hour to waste. So
it was fun, regardless of the, you know, somewhat shitty booking. It was fun.
Oh, yeah.
They got so much accomplished. And let's not forget, pre-show, I don't think we mentioned this, New Age Outlaws won the tag team titles, and Cody Rhodes and Goldust were in the Rumble, and Goldust accidentally eliminated Cody Rhodes.
Mm-hmm. The New Age Outlaws, I'm very, very happy that they are now the tag team champions. You know, a lot of people are kind of complaining about this, because now the Clique is running the show. Now, I'll tell you this right now, if the Clique was really running the show, Orton would not be champion. Triple H would be champion. New Age Outlaws would be tag team champions, definitely, and they would never lose them. Kevin Nash would be booking. X-Pac would be involved there somehow. So, no, the Clique is not running the show. Just letting you know that.
It's right now. People, I don't know. but one thing I will say was Kane wrestling in slacks.
Kane wrestling in pants was scary than anything.
Okay, here's the thing. On one hand, it makes me sad because I've been a big supporter of the corporate Kane character, but, I mean, he's been wrestling at house shows in his normal attire without the mask. Then you see Kane. You see the Big Red Monster wrestling in slacks at the Royal Rumble. Even though I'm not a big complainer, I've been a big supporter of this character, but it hurt me. A little bit of me inside was just crushed.
A part of you died.
Kane was, yes. A part of me died because Kane wrestled in slacks. Don't get me wrong, though. I am proud of Kane for really – he's in killer fucking shape. I will give him that. But Jesus, he was wrestling in slacks.
Well, this is a scary scene.
Yeah, which I think it's interesting that the one that the Rumble where his record gets broken is the Rumble where he wrestles in, like, normal clothing. But I thought it was a decent Rumble. Batista, I'm very worried. I mean, no, I think we expected this, but Batista, much like The Rock when he came back, he seemed very winded because he hasn't wrestled in like 4 years.
And also,
so hopefully that's not an issue.
It also kind of looked like Batista just threw on his gear just really, really quick because I think those were like, because I think those same tights are like what, like what Bobby Lashley used to wear, you know?
They look like Batista's gear from OVW.
A little bit, yeah.
Like maybe it was Leviathan. It's like, I don't know. But like, I mean, hey, Batista kind of changed up his gear, so that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, like, and you know, of course, after the show, apparently, Batista was mocking the Yes Chants, and he flipped off the crowd.
Yeah, okay, I'm actually hearing a mix that he was doing the Yes Chants with his middle fingers.
Oh, well, there you go. So,
and then I've seen a lot of people saying that he's unprofessional because of this. Like, not... Oh, God, this is the episode of South Park where Kenny dies masturbating in a Batman costume.
That's good to know that you're paying attention to that and not focusing on that.
No, it's just, I had the TV on, I wasn't paying attention, I just saw that, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's a great scene.
Yeah.
No, okay, anyway. Oh, shit, I actually forgot what I was saying. See, damn you, South Park.
Batista flipping off the crowd.
Oh, okay. That was hilarious, first of all. I mean, like, because maybe it's because I'm an asshole, but I would have done the same thing. I can't blame Batista for doing that. Like, the fans were completely... They were shitting on him for something he had no control over. It's just stupid.
Yeah, all right. Now, as for Monday Night Raw... probably won't spend too much time on this, but, yeah, so we now know, what kind of chamber match we're going to have. It's going to be for the world title this year. And right now, we got Randy Orton, John Cena, Daniel Bryan, and Sheamus. And the other two are safe for SmackDown, but we mentioned them earlier, but, you know, we won't mention them again if you just don't want to know. But anyways, this chamber match I'm actually kind of looking forward to, and if anybody is upset about the fact that the Shield will not be in there, just letting you know now, if the Shield was in there, that would have made zero sense.
Yeah, and then you would have had people saying, Bryan is buried, Bryan's not in a title match, what is wrong, Bryan? So, and I mean, okay, but you're so right. Like, what sense would Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins versus, okay, let's say that the two guys who qualified on SmackDown are in a chamber match for the world title with Randy Orton and all three members of the Shield. It is 100% obvious who's winning that match.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes no fucking sense. And besides, did you read what the spoiler about who the Shield are facing in the Elimination Chamber?
I did, and I'm very excited about it, and... All right, I really can't say much without spoiling it. So, all right, another spoiler alert, people, just saying right now. So, like, if you don't know, if you don't want to know anything that happened on SmackDown, mute right now. The Shield will be facing the Wyatt family at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view.
Yes.
And what I want this match in, I want this to be the first ever six-man tag team Elimination Chamber match.
This is what we all begged for last year. Hopefully we get it.
Last year we did not get it. That was a huge missed opportunity. You had Cena, Sheamus, and Ryback against the Shield. This year we need to have that. It has been an option available in the video games for years, and we have yet to have it in real life. So this would be a perfect opportunity right now. It would be great. All six guys have never been in an Elimination Chamber match. So this makes perfect sense. So I'm saying do it.
and it's another chance to make Roman Reigns. Like, okay, like, let's book it this way. Let's say that Ambrose and Rollins are eliminated, and then Reigns eliminates all the Wyatts. That makes Reign look big again. And then that sets up great for what I think is obvious, a triple threat match at Mania.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a triple threat is going to happen at some point because Ambrose has held that title, the U.S. title now, for damn near almost a year.
Yes.
I believe
until WrestleMania, it will have been 11 months.
I believe he's getting very close to breaking MVP's record, or if he's already broken it now, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, I mean,
I think he's about a month or two off.
Yeah, but he's getting damn close to breaking it, so. Yeah, definitely. I'm saying right now, you have that match in the chamber. Makes perfect sense. First ever six-man tag inside the chamber. You know, I really think it accomplishes a lot of things.
Honestly, my favorite part about this match is this. People have been saying it for 6 months. Shield and the, like, I don't, also, spoilers because it's been a couple minutes. If you, you know, I'm going to say just a quick spoiler. You can really only mute it for a couple seconds, I guess. But people have been bitching for 6 months. Yeah, I completely lost my train of thought. For 6 months, people have been saying Shield versus Wyatt Family, WrestleMania, do it. My thing is this, I think it's a dream match. I would love to see this match happen. I've been saying I would like to see this match happen either on a Raw or on pay-per-view. I don't want to see this match at WrestleMania. I am thrilled that this match is not happening at WrestleMania. I'm thrilled that it's just having an elimination chamber. It's going to be a great match, mm-hmm. and then we can just have it be that. We don't need – it just doesn't need to be at WrestleMania. The Shield can all face each other. Then Bray Wyatt can face John Cena. Eric Rowan and Luke Harper can do something. I don't – they probably won't compete at WrestleMania, but
– No, but
– I don't know.
And definitely, I mean, like, you know, with this – what was I going to say? You know, there are at some points where heel versus heel or heels versus heels work sometimes. I think this is the one time that it's actually going to work.
Well, look at it this way. Roman Reigns is basically a face at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's obvious that Reigns, I mean, whether people like it or not, Roman Reigns is going to be the next John Cena.
Yes. All right, look at it this way. I think that something's going to happen where Roman it's either going to be a repeat of TLC where Roman spears Ambrose or Rollins, and then the other team, you know, picks up the victory, or Roman Reigns is just going to completely dominate that match and get the win, and then Ambrose and Rollins are going to turn on him.
Yep.
Something's going to happen because I've been saying this for a while now. It's going to be Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose for the United States title at WrestleMania. Okay, I just thought of something really weird. You just said Roman Reigns is going to be next John Cena, did you not?
Yes.
Okay. If Roman Reigns wins the title at WrestleMania 30, and he wins the United States title, his first ever singles title in the WWE will have been the United States title, won at WrestleMania 30. John Cena's first singles title is the United States title, WrestleMania 20. And I've been saying this for a long time. Roman Reigns is going to be champion at next year's WrestleMania. If that happens, Roman Reigns will win his first world title a year, like 10 years after Cena did. How weird would that be?
Seems like WWE is going through this period. It's like every 10 years, something bigger happens. I mean, like, because, like, if you...
Brian is Benoit.
Yeah, because if you look at it, I mean, 10 years before WrestleMania 20, I mean, like, you had a new star be established in Shawn Michaels.
And I think people thought that match was going to establish Razor Ramon as well.
Yes.
And plus, Owen beat Brett. Wait, was that was the event that Owen beat Brett, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I thought. And then Brett won the title that night. So, that was the first, I believe that's the only WrestleMania where there was scheduled to be two WWE championship defenses. Because WrestleMania 9 was the first where there were two WWE title matches, but the second was not scheduled. But this was the first WrestleMania where there were two scheduled. It was almost a mini tournament of sorts.
Yes, because Luger had, because I believe Luger had faced Yokozuna and he lost. I believe so. I mean, like, I'm probably going to get corrected. Then afterwards in the night, Bret Hart faced Yoko and he won the WWE Championship.
Yeah, and of course, because we don't... I keep thinking... Okay, my clock is, like, a little bit ahead.
We got 10 minutes left. pretty much.
Yeah, okay. My phone says we have 5 minutes left. Okay. But basically, I thought Raw was solid from what I saw. I was watching True Detective, which, amazing show. Watch True Detective. Holy shit. Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. But, you know, I was kind of, you know, multitasking, which I need to rewatch, actually, because I don't remember very much from that episode. And then Raw seemed pretty solid from what I was paying attention to. So I'm very interested in that. I'm looking forward to it. Oh, my God, I'm stupid. Not looking for. Okay. It was a good Raw.
It was a good show, I must say. A lot of people are saying that it was a crap show, but I thought that it was pretty good.
I didn't see, from what I saw, I didn't see anything wrong with it.
All right, so.
But I think, is that all we really had to say about Raw and the Royal Rumble?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, let's talk about something that this was not expected to be talked about on the show. I was not aware of this. I got up this morning because I work every once in a while, and I had work today. I was just relaxing. I was eating my McDonald's sausage burrito. I was drinking a Coke. I was getting ready to go to work. And I just look at my phone and my Twitter. Everyone's saying CM Punk quits WWE. I'm like, okay, I'm not thinking anything of it, and I'm just kind of ignoring it. And so I go to work, vacuum some shit, play with her dog. Then I got home, and I look at my phone again, and, like, everyone's saying, okay, Punk quit WWE. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I see people saying Bully Ray tweeted him, like, TMZ reported on. And so I look up the TMZ. I was told that this was a video interview. There's no fucking video. Mm-hmm. So no one knows if it's true or not. All there is a picture of CM Punk, and TMZ is saying that Punk is furious that he isn't main eventing WrestleMania because he's busted his ass, and, like, something about how that, like, his match with Triple H at WrestleMania has been changed to Triple H versus Daniel Bryan.
Which is good.
Yeah, because I've been saying for a while, if Bryan is, it doesn't look like Bryan's going to be in the title picture at WrestleMania, so, hey, Bryan versus Triple H is the way to go.
All right. Yeah, and I mean, like, all right, and I believe the news broke out recently. Now, I found this out around, like, I think news of it broke out, like, really, really, really early in the morning last night. Wait.
Yeah, that's what you were telling me earlier.
Early in the morning last night, yeah. Anyways, it was a certain time of day where a lot of people in North America were not awake. Anyways. Yeah, and there's been so many stories right now. I mean, saying that Punk is furious that he's not main eventing Mania with the championship on the line, that he's just had a lot of nagging injuries, he's taken time off, that you know, he's just sick of the direction that he's going in. Even people that are saying that he's done because he has an HIV, which is completely...
Oh, that is so stupid.
Which is completely redundant. That is so stupid.
And they're saying it's from a dirty tattoo needle because Punk loves tattoos.
It is... so stupid. And, oh, and also, people are, you know, passing around this tweet that AJ Lee sent. I'm going to shoot down those rumors right now, even though I'm not CM Punk or AJ Lee, thank God. But I'm going to shoot down those rumors right now. That tweet is over 140 characters. So that tweet
Jamie,
is on.
Your ass is as nice as AJ's. I'm sorry to tell you.
Well, thank you, Caleb. But anyways, I'm just telling you right now, that tweet is over 140 characters, so that is automatically fake. And for those of you that actually believed it, I don't know what exactly you're thinking. But anyways, that
AJ Punk shipper.
AJ Punk shippers, just letting you know now, that tweet is absolutely fake. It has not been deleted. Do you know why it hasn't been deleted? Because it never existed to begin with.
Yes, exactly. And this is my honest, and I'm going to give my 100% full opinion on the CM Punk situation. Okay, here's the thing. If this is true, no one can stop CM Punk from leaving. If Punk doesn't want to do it, he doesn't have to do it. If he is just fed up and he's injured, then he can leave, and if he wants to. He can pull a fucking Stone Cold for 2002. If he has, I'm not saying he has. I don't fucking know. I'm waiting for WWE or CM Punk to confirm it. Apparently, they unfollowed him on Twitter. They unverified him after he won Money in the Bank 2011, just letting you all know.
Yep.
So if you look at this, if this is true, then as much as it is 100% Punk's right as an American citizen and as a adult who's working in a business, I'm sure he has money saved up, and if this is true, and if he wants to retire from professional wrestling, he can. If he wants to go to Japan or Ring of Honor, fuck, if he for some reason wants to go to TNA and try to salvage that stinking shit, he can. But here is the thing. Punk leaving WWE with those circumstances is still, any way you put it, immature, and I think it's just him having kind of, to a degree, a piss-poor attitude. I love Punk. I've been a fan of his for a long time now. But him just walking out, I'm not going to stop being a fan of his. Just like all of you dumb fucking assholes who stopped being a fan of Batista because he won the Rumble, I didn't stop being a fan of Batista. I fucking love Batista. He was one of my favorites when I first started watching. Look at Punk. I still love Punk. Even if he did walk out, I don't give a fuck. He's given me some of my favorite matches of all time. But the bottom line is, having a piss-poor attitude because you're not, you know, I mean, if it's mostly because of injuries, I understand, but if it is seriously mostly because he's not main eventing WrestleMania, that is stupid. Because you can't decide what you deserve. And does Punk deserve main event WrestleMania? Probably. But, like, you don't decide what you fucking deserve. At the end of the day, they do. So on one hand, it's like Punk, I know Punk's been kind of an, is kind of an asshole backstage sometimes to officials, so maybe that is it. I don't know. We don't know. It is not confirmed. Punk has tweeted nothing. WWE has not given us any notification. All I'm saying is, if neither of them have said anything, and if on Raw on Monday, if you hear Cult of Personality, I'm pretty sure those rumors have been shot down.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say about it.
Now, a lot of people are saying that, like, oh, the official WWE account unfollowed CM Punk, and also apparently his Best in the World documentary has been taken off of Netflix. And another documentary actually got put on Netflix today, and that was the Thy Kingdom Come Triple H documentary that was released back in September. Now, I find that kind of funny, just for me, but if this does somehow turn out to be a work, in the tiniest possibility that it does come out to be a work, I'm saying this right now, WWE is doing a damn good job. And now, you know, again, people will say, like, oh, this is going to be a repeat of 2011. Yes, but it's being done a lot better because then Punk will be gone for a much longer period of time. Because in 2011, he came back way too soon.
Yeah, what, 8 days?
Something like that, yeah.
They should just wait until fucking SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm. All right. I believe we got 3 minutes left here, so.
Okay, why don't we start doing our plugs? You go first.
Yes. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Jamie Lee Mack, and that's it.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at The Awesome Clark. Follow my backup account that will, okay, at some point I've got to make it my main account, at Caleb Clark J. Follow the show's account at EV of Radio, which we need to change. Follow Cameron, who, like I said, he was busy tonight. He was unable to show up. You can follow him at That LSU Fan. His avi is Porn Stash from Orange and New Black, so that's awesome. Then other stuff is you can check out the website, of course, for PWP Radio. That is ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com for exclusive articles and content on wrestling. They got this cool humor news thing that is very funny. I've read a couple of them. Pretty cool.
And you guys can also like the official Facebook page, going to facebook.com/ProWrestlingPowerhouse, and you can also follow them on Twitter at PW Powerhouse. And also, as always, this edition of CNC Reviews is brought to you by Audible.com. If you want to listen to it, Audible has it. With over 150,000 titles in virtually every genre, you'll find what you're looking for. Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial today by signing up at audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. That's audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Any closing thoughts, Caleb?
I don't really, okay, all I'm going to say is this, follow at Lord Chongo on Twitter. Like, this dude, if you guys are familiar with Steven Larson, which of course, me and Cameron are, and I'm not sure if Jamie is, well, whatever, nonetheless, we got 6 seconds, but, they used to have this podcast called Tree of Woe, and this dude was on it, and his name was Mark Chongo, and I followed the dude, he followed me back on Twitter. That's pretty fucking cool. Like, that's awesome. Like, literally, go follow him at Lord Chongo. He doesn't have enough followers. Like, the dude is awesome. Go do that. I don't know why I gave Lord Chongo a shout-out, but I did. That's all I have to say. Watch True Detective. It's pretty cool. Listen to our show all the time. This, you know, just cool shit for the future. Cameron should. I don't see why he wouldn't be back with us next week, because he should be good. And shit. Oh, also, yeah. Stuff and things.
Alrighty.
You know what? I don't feel the need to plagiarize Philip DeFranco, so James.
All right. Have a good week, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you here next week.
Goodbye. I'm Caleb. That's Jamie. Cameron couldn't be here tonight. Have fun, and don't die.
That's good.
Yes.